This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 85.
It's been my experience that you can't credibly help other leaders be more effective unless and until you understand yourself as a leader and what you want to be known for and how you want to be viewed as a leader, and understand to some degree there are almost always going to be gaps between what you aspire to be known for as a leader and probably as a person versus how other people see you. So unless you go through some kind of process to better understand who you are and what you stand for and what you want to be known for as a leader, as an HR person, it really diminishes your credibility and your effectiveness in helping other leaders be more effective. And probably the single most important element of having a personal leadership philosophy is have one and don't keep it a secret. Tell other people what it is, because that's part of the storytelling and teaching process, is to articulate to other people what you want to be known for, and it helps them get more comfortable in doing the same.
Why should you aspire to be a business person, not a business partner? How can having a leadership philosophy make you a more effective HR leader? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Hey everyone, if you've been listening to the podcast, then you know I'm incredibly passionate about inspiring and developing the next generation of HR leaders. But you may not know, I'm also passionate about speaking to and working with HR organizations to enhance their capabilities. In fact, one of the coolest things that happened since I've launched the podcast is that several HR organizations have asked me to speak about the future of HR and to support their efforts to develop their HR teams. It's been an incredible honor to work with these HR organizations in 2023, and I'm looking to have an even bigger impact in 2024. If you'd like me to speak to your HR organization, or if I can ever be helpful in building the capability of your HR team, please reach out, as I would love to hear from you. This is a special episode in our What Works series. If you've been listening to the Future of HR over the past year or so, then you know the What Works series is where I bring in experts to go deep on specific topics. In the past, we've covered mid-year reviews in episode 33 and talent reviews in episode 58. And this week, we're fortunate to have Ian Ziskin to talk about his work and perspectives on developing world-class HR leaders. This is a topic that I am deeply passionate about and the reason why I started the podcast in the first place. And Ian is someone who also cares deeply about building and developing future HR leaders. Ian is a president of Excel Group, a human capital coaching and consulting firm that he founded in 2010, following a highly successful 28-year career as a corporate business executive. Ian's global leadership experience includes serving as a CHRO and other senior leadership roles for three Fortune 100 companies, including Northrop Grumman, Quest Communications, and TRW. Ian has written or co-edited four books, and today we'll be asking about one of them called Three, The Human Resources Emerging Executive, which is a great, great book. Ian was also elected and recognized as a fellow of the National Academy for Human Resources, which is considered to be the highest honor in the HR profession. I know you're going to get a lot out of this conversation as Ian and I discuss why the best HR leaders courageously push back against misguided ideas and advocate for the right ones, even if they're unpopular. Why the best HR leaders are clear on their leadership philosophy. Why being a great coach is all about the art of the question. His recommendations for CHROs and how they can develop their next generation HR talent. And his advice for next gen HR leaders on how they can develop and invest in themselves, and much, much more. Ian, welcome to the Future of HR Podcast. How are you?
Doing great, JP. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. It's exciting to talk with you today. You have done a lot in your career. In fact, you've had two successful careers. First as an HR executive and CHRO for Northrop Grumman Corporation, you are a fellow of the National Academy of Human Resources. That's considered to be the highest honor in the HR profession, so that's awesome. And then you transition into consultant, board advisor, entrepreneur, teacher, speaker, and four-time author. I mean, you have done a lot, Ian. I don't know where you make the time, but we're excited you made the time to be on the podcast today.
Yeah, for me, it's been a blast for 42 years or so of my career, but I would also say a pleasure to be with you as well and get a chance to bat around some ideas.
Well, you were passionate about the future of HR as well, and I know you do a lot to give back, whether it's teaching MBA students or mentoring earlier career HR professionals or CHROs. And so that's why I thought you'd be perfect for the podcast. I'm glad you came on. And I'm curious, the first question for you is really, from your perspective, how has the role of the CHRO changed over the last 10 years or so?
It's been driven, a lot of those changes, by a variety of environmental factors, trends that we don't necessarily control, but we're certainly having to adapt to and respond and influence many of those. We could go on for hours, but the ones that really stand out the most for me is that pretty much everything that senior level HR leaders are dealing with these days are multidisciplinary, cross-functional, big, hairy, and complex. Unlike 10 or 20 or certainly 30 or 40 years ago when I started, where a lot of things were very functional, the solutions were very HR specific, now very few things are. So I think a lot of the most senior level HR people and those who are most successful are very savvy at collaborating and partnering across multiple disciplines and functions to get things done. I tend to think of it as being an orchestra conductor where you're not an expert on every instrument, but you have to bring together those experts who play various instruments. A second thing, which for me has really been quite notable, is the insertion of tech savvy and understanding artificial intelligence and algorithms and automation and human machine collaboration and that sort of thing. I think it's being embedded almost everywhere, but the HR profession is no exception to that. And I think the best HR people are becoming good at that and the data analytics, data-driven decision-making that accompanies that. I think the final thing I'll mention just for the sake of brevity is speed. Everything's about doing it faster and in a more agile fashion. I think HR people oftentimes historically have been accused of being too slow, too deliberate, too bureaucratic, almost too thoughtful about things before they get implemented. And there's not a lot of space left for that anymore. I think organizations are demanding we just move faster in a much more flexible way.
That's really interesting how all three of those things play together. And when you think about the multidisciplinary approach to solving problems, I wonder, do you feel like the shift has been the world's got more complex, and so the problems require everyone to work together and think through to solve the problems? Or has HR really risen in terms of status and stature and people seeing, hey, you should be able to help us on this business problem versus just solving what used to be maybe an HR problem?
I think yes and yes. That's probably not a satisfactory answer, but they're mutually reinforcing. Most of the problems are, in fact, more complicated and require the input and involvement and collaboration of a broader array of people. So for sure, I see that trend. But I would also say, to the credit of a lot of HR people, we've made some progress in building credibility and making a contribution and demonstrating an understanding of the business. And therefore, people are being invited to a lot more parties that are multidisciplinary and cross-functional and being asked to contribute to dealing with initiatives and problems that HR people historically were not invited to address. They were left out of the equation. Now they're being included, and I think they've in many ways earned that. We've got a long way to go, of course, but I think there's been a lot of progress in that arena.
That's helpful. And thinking about the most successful CHROs that you've worked with, and I know you've worked with many, what do they have in common? What sets them apart from your perspective?
Probably the single biggest thing they have in common is courage. They're willing to stand up to and push back against people and ideas that don't make sense. They're also willing to advocate for things that do make sense, even when they're unpopular. One of the expressions I really like that I think captures this is you have to decide whether you want to do your job or keep your job. The very best senior level HR people I'm around actually focus a lot more on doing their job than worrying about whether they're going to keep their job. And they push for things, even if those things are unpopular or put them in an awkward position with their boss or with the board or other people, because there's a recognition that a huge part of that role is advocacy. The other thing is not anything new. It's been around for years. And that is, best HR people that I'm around at every level, including CHROs, have excellent business acumen. They understand the value chain by which the business makes money. And therefore, they have a good understanding as well of where the people dimension can be part of the equation to help the business win in the marketplace. We've been talking about better business acumen in HR for as long as I've been in the profession, and probably longer, and haven't always progressed at the speed that I would like to see. But the very, very best senior level HR people I'm around have done a great job of becoming business people first and HR people second. I think that's a very important dimension for success.
It is so critical, and we've got so much more work to do, especially for earlier career HR folks and how they get that business acumen earlier and start to get the business bug. So they're excited about learning about that and focused on it. You've also written 4 books, and I want to talk about one of them, which is called 3, The Human Resources Emerging Executive, as I think it's relevant to the mission of the podcast. Tell us more about why you wrote this book and who you wrote it for.
I wrote the book for a couple of reasons, really related to my passion for the HR profession and trying to give back to others coming along in the profession, maybe a little bit earlier in their careers than me. But as it turns out, as the book was being written and as I've utilized it since it was written in a lot of the consulting and coaching and leadership development stuff I've done, what I've come to discover, much to my surprise, is it seems to have equal applicability whether you're a relatively new CHRO who's trying to figure out how to spend their time and on what sort of things, but also for earlier career HR people. And probably most gratifying has been the realization that a lot of non-HR people leaders are getting something out of it as well, because it gives them a little bit of a roadmap for focusing on how to get the most out of their people and their teams and their organization. And that's not necessarily something, to be honest, that I set out to focus on when I wrote the book, but it's been a nice evolution to see how it's being utilized.
Yeah, I think it really is applicable for senior HR leaders. It's a good reminder of some things you may have forgotten or thought about or want to reinforce. And if you're newer in your career, I think it lays out a really great framework. And one of the frameworks that I think is really important is you talk about a personal leadership philosophy and how the very best HR leaders have a personal leadership philosophy. Tell us more about this and why it's important.
It's been my experience that you can't credibly help other leaders be more effective unless and until you understand yourself as a leader and what you want to be known for and how you want to be viewed as a leader, and understand to some degree there are almost always going to be gaps between what you aspire to be known for as a leader and probably as a person versus how other people see you. So unless you go through some kind of process to better understand who you are and what you stand for and what you want to be known for as a leader, as an HR person, it really diminishes your credibility and your effectiveness in helping other leaders be more effective. So I try to cause people to think about things such as, what have you learned from other leaders? What are the hot buttons that you have in terms of watching other people in action that kind of drive you crazy that you wouldn't necessarily want to emulate? But more importantly, what are the things that you've learned from others that you would in fact want to emulate? And probably the single most important element of having a personal leadership philosophy is have one and don't keep it a secret. Tell other people what it is, because that's part of the storytelling and teaching process, is to articulate to other people what you want to be known for, and it helps them get more comfortable in doing the same.
It also helps you be more accountable to that personal leadership philosophy by sharing that, because now you've gone public with it. So people are like, oh, wait, that's what you believe. I want to see how you behave. And so people hopefully live up to that standard, or at least like you said, aspire to.
Totally agree. And I think in today's environment, there's such an increased level of expectation for candor and transparency that I think people who work for you see you as a more credible leader and person. The more you're able to articulate who you are, what you stand for, and what they should expect of you, they can hold you accountable, but they also have some degree of expectation as to what they can hold you accountable for. I think that fits really well in today's environment where people do expect such a high level of transparency.
Absolutely. It builds some trust, but also I think it helps people understand how to work with you better, right? So if you can say, hey, this is what I'm really all about. This is how I operate. This is my operating system. This is my leadership philosophy. It makes it easier for your team to adapt and discuss like, hey, that's going to work or not.
I've seen this work really well with coaching clients as well, because what you're doing when you're being that open with people about who you are and what you stand for, what you want to be known for, you're actually inviting them in to help you. In other words, here's what I aspire to be. Sometimes you may see me behaving in a way that's inconsistent with what I say I aspire to be. And I'm inviting you to call me out on it and make me aware of when I'm missing the mark. It makes me better as a leader, but it also helps create an environment of much more inclusion and involvement on the part of the team around you in helping to shape you as a leader and also hold you accountable. I have found that to be very effective in working with a lot of coaching clients.
It's a great point. And it's so awesome to be able to co-create with your team, be that open and say, hey, give me that feedback. I'm open to that feedback. I'm aspiring to this. That's the key point, I think, there. Ian, that you're not like, I've got it figured out. It's more of like, hey, I'm aspiring to be this. I'm not always going to be perfect. Trying to be consistent. Trying to communicate clearly. Maybe I won't always hit the mark. So
bringing it back to the role of the HR leader, JP, I also am just a firm believer that if you don't role model this well yourself as a leader, it's really hard to teach other leaders outside of the HR profession how to be better at this. It's a chance to practice what you preach, so to speak, and demonstrate to others that it's not only doable, but valuable.
I think there's a pressure for HR to be really good leaders, right? We want to have credibility. If we're going to coach our leaders, we have to be able to have the toolkit ourselves and execute that. And so if we're not great leaders, the credibility may not be there in coaching.
That's my belief, certainly.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, Ian and I will be right back to discuss why being a great coach is all about the art of the question and his advice for next-gen HR leaders on the best ways to invest and develop yourself. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The Institute for the Future recently came out with a report that said 85% of jobs that will exist in 2030 haven't been invented yet. While I can't predict the future, I am certain that the only way to future-proof your career is by learning to learn. This applies to our organizations as well. And as HR leaders, our job is to ensure our team members have the skills and capabilities needed now and in the future. This is why I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens. They're your one-stop shop for all of your compliance, upskilling needs, and leadership development challenges. Biz Library is an industry leader for high-quality, off-the-shelf content that will solve your compliance needs, support the upskilling of teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning in your organization, give Biz Library a call as they can support you with their innovative L&D platforms, best-in-class content, and unrivaled strategic support. And if you mention that JP at the Future of HR podcast sent you, you'll receive a 10% discount on year one of your Biz Library contract. So head on over to bizlibrary.com and see how they can help you to elevate learning in your organization today. You also challenged HR to think differently about developing themselves and propose it in your book, the HR Leadership Development Triangle, which is broken out by what, who, and when. Can you explain the development triangle and why it's important?
Yeah, happy to. In my experience historically, most individuals, but also most organizations, tend to focus a lot on what I would describe as the what. These are the competencies and capabilities and content areas that we feel like we need to be more expert on in order to be a more effective leader. In the HR space, examples would include things like integrating business and people strategy or leadership and talent development or how to lead change or how to create a culture that's a more of a performance-oriented culture, and the list goes on. Those are all content areas of expertise that you'd need to be good at. And those what kind of things are extremely important, but they're actually, to me, only a third of what you should be focusing on relates to your own development. The other two things tend to get more short shrift than they should. So the second thing that I think people tend to under leverage and not focus on enough is what I would describe as who. So paying attention over the course of one's career, from early career to late career, who is it that you actually are spending your time with? And how does that change over the course of time, depending on your role and your level of responsibility in the organization? As an example, most people who are fairly junior in HR roles are not spending a whole ton of time these days with the board of directors or the CEO or the senior leadership team of their company, but they will increasingly over time. And preparing themselves to do that in a more effective way is important. The other one, which I think is even more relevant here for everyone at every level of HR, is that most HR people, in my experience, basically make their name and build their credibility based on their internal expertise and focus. They're down and in. They understand the internal workings of the organization, the culture, the people, who hates who, where all the skeletons are buried. What does it take to be successful in this organization? And that's a really important, valuable set of knowledge and experience to have, but it's completely inadequate as you progress in your career, where the very best HR people that I'm around, particularly in senior levels, also have a lot of sophistication and understanding of the external environment. They have relationships with people in other companies and other industries. They understand public policy related implications of things that are happening in the world around us. And particularly if your hope is to progress to a CHRO kind of role, you end up discovering pretty quickly when you get into that role that almost everybody that you're interacting with is much more externally savvy and experienced than you are if you've spent your entire career focusing on the down and in. So one thing that I encourage HR people to pay a lot of attention to as they're making their way through their career is get a good balance between the external and the internal. So that's one of the other aspects of who. The final point is around the when. I tend to think of these as critical developmental inflection points over the course of one's career. There's a lot to be learned by moving across business units, geographies, businesses that are being successful versus businesses that are in trouble, perhaps even moving cross-functionally outside of HR for a period of time to get a variety of exposures to different things. The way I tend to think about this is I've met a lot of leaders and a lot of HR leaders in the course of my career who are very proud that they have 30 years of experience, and they should be, because that 30 years of experience matters a lot. However, when you peel back the onion, what you quickly discover is they actually have 1 year of experience 30 times. They've basically been doing the same thing over and over and over again in the same organization, and they may be very expert and they may be very well known, but they're not very broadly experienced, and they haven't built a good, strong foundational base upon which they can continue to expand their career. So I think the balance between what you know, who you're interacting with, and the critical developmental inflection points that happen when at a certain junctures in your career, that's the triangle that has to get balanced more appropriately if you want to have a fully well-prepared and developed career path that you're putting yourself on, especially if you aspire to senior level HR roles.
Yeah, I really like the model, Ian, and I think it's different because you're right. We always focus on the what, these skills versus the who, and then the when. And, you know, I think about the when and the inflection points, and maybe someone's doing really well. They're at a company, they're growing, but when do you know it's the right time to either maybe go external or try to switch that role? How do you gauge that? I know it's context specific, but are there things that people should be thinking about if they're like, I think I need to make a move, but I'm not sure? How do you think about that in terms of making career shifts?
Yeah, I thought about this a lot, not only for myself over the course of my career, but also, you know, working with a lot of other people on the same dilemma. And a couple of things seem to be fairly consistent. One is the time when you feel like you're least ready for making a move is probably when you need to make it, because that's how you stretch yourself. Second thing that seems pretty consistent is if you've gotten to the point where you know what's going to happen every day and every week, and you've been through the same cycles, year-end compensation, performance review, feedback discussions, you know all the people, there's not too many surprises left, that's a really good sign that it's time to move on. So if you're thinking to yourself, I'm not really stressed out, I've got this job kind of figured out, that's good for a while, but chances are you're not going to learn and grow nearly as much as when you put yourself in the position of laying in bed, awake at night, staring at the ceiling, wondering if you're going to fail miserably in this job. That usually tells you that you're being stretched and grown. The only other point I'll emphasize, not to sound too critical of companies that are trying to invest in us as HR people, But I'm a firm believer in controlling your own development destiny to the degree that you can. So while hopefully most people who are listening in on our conversation are working for companies where they feel like they're being invested in and developed appropriately, it turns out the vast majority of companies are a little bit short-sighted and a lot selfish. They're going to invest in you and move you from job to job when they feel like it's convenient and good for them, not necessarily for you. So especially if you're an ambitious kind of person wanting to move fairly quickly through your career, you kind of have to take control of timing. And generally the timing means you're going to move a little faster than feels comfortable. That's generally going to be better for your development than moving more slowly than feels comfortable.
Such great advice. I'm glad I asked that question because I knew you'd have some great gems there for folks. And just a really good way to think about it, especially love, you know, moving when you're not really ready. Because being stretched isn't comfortable. And you go in those roles, it's never comfortable. A new job, a new company, you always feel nervous for the first 90 days. But you have to get used to that, right? If you have to embrace it a little bit and say, that's normal, it's like you're going to give a speech and of course you're anxious, but you don't let that paralyze you. And I think for somebody who's made a lot of transitions, you have to sort of embrace that and say, okay, now how do I dig in? How do I turn this into a positive?
Yeah. And I don't mean to sound arrogant about it. It's not as if you say, well, I'm not really ready, but I know I'm going to figure it out. I know I'm going to be successful. I think it's really more of a question of saying, I'm probably not fully ready. However, the potential for failure and the extreme opportunity to learn on steroids, you know, is probably going to make me better over time. And if I'm okay with the stress and the uncertainty and the ambiguity that's associated with that, a lot of great learning will come from that. If you only focus on, I know I'm ready and the timing is right, and I have pretty much a 0% chance of failure because I feel like I've been preparing for this role and I'm extremely ready and prepared for it, chances are it's not as developmental a move as if it's something where your brain is exploding and you're thinking to yourself, I'm really not sure if I can do this. And it's going to take some real effort and energy for me to get comfortable with it in the first 6 months or a year. That's really much more developmental. I just encourage more HR people to give themselves the benefit of the doubt and realize they can stretch and grow to some of these assignments that they might be given the opportunity to take on, rather than feeling like I've got to minimize my risk of failing or tripping or looking foolish. You're not going to get nearly as much development out of those kinds of assignments.
Really well said. Another thing you said, Ian, is one of the most important roles HR leaders can play is to provide sound advice and coaching to their business leaders. From your perspective, what does great coaching look like in practice?
It starts with the art of the question. Most people, we tend to think we're going to give advice and provide some coaching. That involves a lot of talking and telling, and there's some of that, but I actually think that it really all begins with asking good, high-quality questions that causes people to come to their own conclusions and think about things that they probably would prefer to avoid thinking about. So I think a lot of our job is to provoke. I don't mean provoke as annoy, but I mean provoke in the sense of causing people to think about stuff that they would just assume not think about. The other aspect of coaching and providing advice that I have always found useful, in fact, my favorite number one criteria here, is to recognize that the truth has a time and a place. And I think a large percentage of what we do in coaching and advising people is really about bringing the truth to the forefront, what's really happening, defining reality, giving people the feedback that they need in order to address things that they might not otherwise know about. However, there's a contextual aspect to it, which is understanding the recipient of the advice. How are they best going to digest it and understand it and bring it on board and take it seriously? What I mean by that is some people are notorious for don't talk to this person before 10 a.m. Or other people are notorious for you should not have an important meeting or discussion with somebody after 5 o'clock because they're not at their best. Or understanding, for example, whether the person you're working for is okay with the idea of receiving pushback and feedback in a room publicly in front of 25 other people, or whether they're the type of person who's going to receive whatever you're telling them, especially if it's difficult feedback, much better in a one-on-one private setting after the meeting is over. I think a lot of HR people make the mistake of saying, well, the truth is really important, so I'm going to unburden myself in the moment by blurting out whatever it is I think this person needs to hear without necessarily thinking about who the recipient is and how are they best going to receive, process, and do something about that feedback. And that requires a certain level of willingness to understand your audience. And that's really important, I think, as part of being a good advisor or coach, is not just understanding the facts or the truth, but also understanding who your audience is and how they're going to receive that.
Yeah, I think the underlying your point is what you're really saying, and I'm hearing, Ian, is we have to make sure if we want to coach that they can hear the message and it's the right time for them to receive the message. It may feel like the right time for us to give it, but if they're not ready, it's going to land flat. It can actually hurt our credibility, hurt the relationship, and you don't want that either. So that's the delicate balance. But it does go back to your point about being courageous in bringing up, are you doing the job or are you trying to keep your job, and that point of giving feedback? But you've got to be smart about it.
Yeah, I don't mean to suggest that all that part of delaying or holding off on giving somebody feedback is around accommodating your fear or anxiety or lack of courage in telling somebody the truth about what is going on. I think we have to do that if we're going to be effective, successful HR leaders. But you also have to understand the person who's receiving the message has a preferred style and is probably better at certain times of the day or certain days of the week or in certain kinds of environments or contexts. And if you understand that better, you're improving dramatically the chances that they're going to hear you and actually do something with the information that you're providing them rather than just dump it on the environment where they may not receive it very well. And therefore, the legitimacy of what you're saying to them gets lost in the fact that they didn't really want to hear it in the environment that you provided it.
Absolutely. We have a lot of CHROs that listen to the Future of HR. And I wonder what your advice is to CHROs on how they should be developing their teams. What are one or two investments that they should be making to continue to elevate and build out the capability of their HR team?
This is going to be an unpopular statement, but I'm going to make it anyway. I think one of the mistakes we often make as HR people is we confuse development with everybody must get the same experience. And we kind of peanut butter spread leadership development program or coaching or feedback or other things that we might be doing for our HR teams, feeling like in the name of fairness, we want to treat everybody the same and therefore include everybody. I don't think that's really appropriate or doable anymore. I think organizations' resources are really tight, time is tight, but I also believe that we ought to be looking for the most pivotal people in the most pivotal roles in HR, just like we should be teaching people outside of HR to do. And therefore, identifying who your highest potential, most promising, most likely people to actually do something with the development is really important. And it also allows you to target what limited resources you have on the people who are going to do the most with the investment that you're making. So that's can be an unpopular position to take sometimes, because I think a lot of people are much more comfortable just peanut butter spreading it and treating everybody the same. But I'm a firm believer in focusing on pivotal talent. The other thing I'll mention about this is that the best investments I'm seeing being made in HR people these days is teaching people how to translate what's going on in their business environment. What's the value chain by which the business makes money, and how can we help this business win, into targeted people strategies and priorities that are going to help the business win. Sometimes that's better done through leadership development. Sometimes it's better done through coaching. Sometimes it's better done through read this book, but helping people to understand better the connection between business priority and people priority is probably the single biggest thing you can do to invest in your people.
What's your advice for next-gen HR leaders themselves on how they should be investing in their own development? We talked about they've got to take accountability for that. Other areas you think they should be thinking about, or other ideas they should be thinking about as they think about their development?
Well, they may or may not have the time or resources to go to an HR leadership development program. As you and I have talked about, there are many of those out there, some high quality, some probably not so high quality, but there are a number of opportunities out there for people if they want to pursue them. But I don't think that's the most reachable for most people. What's most reachable for the typical HR leader up and coming who's trying to invest in their own development is make sure that you're spending a little bit of time outside of the fishbowl that you're working in every minute of every day. Join an HR professional association, get to know some HR people in another company down the street, sponsor a social hour or dinner or get together where you can swap ideas. Because one of the most distinguishing capabilities for up and coming HR leaders that set them apart from everyone else, as we talked about briefly before, is to understand what's happening in the external environment outside of your own company and your own immediate business unit and your own immediate geography and your own immediate industry that you work in. Having that expertise down and in is really valuable, but it's completely insufficient if you're trying to take control of your own development. Knowing more about the external environment, the trends that are happening, what the implications are for public policy, how the world of business and the world of HR is changing around you is really going to set you apart if you understand those things better than the average HR person. It requires a certain amount of time and effort and energy to go seek those things out, but it's there. It's all there happening around you if you pick your head up just long enough to notice what's going on.
Last question for you, Ian. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Reimagine, reposition, and reinvent in order to remain relevant. I really think that there's so many good things happening in the world of HR, but they're also so much affected by what's happening in the changing nature of the workforce and the workplace around us. If we apply the same old solutions in the same old way to a workforce and a workplace and a work environment that's completely different than it was 10 minutes ago, let alone 5 or 10 years ago, we will quickly find ourselves to be irrelevant. And the changing nature of work, workforce, workplace has to get addressed by somebody, but it doesn't necessarily have to get addressed by the HR organization in its current configuration and in its current form with the current people who are in it with the current set of skills. The organization will turn to others who have more relevant sets of skills if we don't remain relevant ourselves. And we have to take full responsibility for making sure that we remain relevant by reimagining and repositioning and reinventing what we're good at and our capabilities. If we don't do that, no one else is going to do it for us.
And I love it. Staying relevant in HR, that is so critical. Thank you so much for being on the Future of HR podcast. It was a great conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, JP.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Ian for sharing his insights on how to develop future HR leaders. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share a podcast with at least one other person, or even better, please leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Libra Clemens. Libra is a global HR executive with deep expertise in the talent, diversity, equity, and inclusion space. In our conversation, we're going to discuss the current state of diversity, equity, and inclusion in 2024, why chief diversity officers make great chief people officers, and a perspective on the future of work. This was a great conversation and one you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.